Chapter 5. May. Northern Style Chorizo. Ingredients. 8 kilos pork loin, 2 kilos pork head or scraps, 1 kilo chiles anchos, 60 grams cumin, 60 grams oregano, 30 grams pepper, 6 grams cloves, 2 cups garlic, 2 liters apple vinegar, 1/4 kilo salt. Preparation. Heat the vinegar and add the chilies after removing the seeds. When the mixture comes to a boil, remove the pan from the heat and put a lid on it so that the chilies soften. Chencha set the cover on the pan and ran to the kitchen garden to help Tita look for worms. Mama Elena kept coming into the kitchen to supervise the preparation of the sausage and the preparations for her bath, and they were behind on both. Ever since Pedro, Rosaura, and Roberto had gone to live in San Antonio, Tita had lost all interest in life, except for her interest in feeding worms to a helpless pigeon. Apart from that, the house could fall down, and it wouldn't have mattered to her. Chencha didn't even want to think about what would happen if Mama Elena came in and found that Tita wasn't helping make the sausage. They had decided to make the sausage because it's one of the best ways to use the meat from a pig economically and get food that both tastes good and keeps well without risk of spoiling. They had also prepared a lot of salt pork, ham, bacon, and lard. They had to get every possible use from this pig, one of the few animals that had survived the visit the Revolutionary Army had made to the ranch a few days before. When the rebels arrived, only Mama Elena, Tita, Chencha, and 2 farmhands, Rosalio and Guadalupe, were at the ranch. Nicholas, the manager, had not yet come back with the cattle he had been forced to go buy. The scarcity of food had made them kill the animals they depended on, which he was now trying to replace. He had taken along 2 of his most trustworthy workers to help him, leaving his son Felipe in charge of the ranch. But Mama Elena had relieved him of that duty, sending him to San Antonio, Texas, for news of Pedro and his family. They were afraid something bad had happened to them, since they hadn't heard a thing. Rosalio rode up at a gallop to tell them that a troop of soldiers was approaching the ranch. Mama Elena immediately picked up her shotgun. As she cleaned it, she plotted how to hide her valuables from the greed and gluttony of these men. No one had ever had anything good to say about these revolutionaries, and obviously what she had heard could scarcely be unreliable, since she'd gotten it from Father Ignacio and the mayor of Piedras Negras. They had told her how the rebels entered houses, destroyed everything, and raped all the women in their path. She ordered Tita, Chencha, and the pig to stay hidden in the cellar. When the revolutionaries arrived, they were met by Mama Elena at the entrance of the house. She had her shotgun hidden in her petticoats, and she had Rosalio and Guadalupe at her side. Her gaze met that of the captain in charge, and he knew immediately from the steeliness of her eyes that they were in the presence of a woman to be reckoned with. "Good afternoon, Senora. Are you the owner of this ranch?" "Yes, I am. What is it you want?" "We've come to ask you to volunteer to help the cause." "I'll volunteer to tell you to take whatever you like from the corn crib and the stable. But that is the limit. I won't allow you to touch anything inside my house. Understand? Those things are for my cause." The captain, laughing, snapped to attention and answered her, "Understood, my general." This joke tickled all the soldiers, and they laughed heartily. But the captain could see you didn't fool around with Mama Elena. What she said was serious, very serious. Trying not to be intimidated by the fierce, domineering look he got from her, he ordered the soldiers to inspect the ranch. They didn't find much. A little corn for scattering and 8 chickens. A frustrated sergeant came back to the captain and said, "The old lady must have everything hidden in the house. Let me go in and take a look around." Mama Elena put her finger on the trigger and answered, "I'm not joking. I repeat, no one is setting foot in my house." Laughing, swinging the chickens he was carrying in his hands, the sergeant started toward the door. Mama Elena raised the gun, braced herself against the wall so she wouldn't be knocked to the ground by the kick of the gun, and shot the chickens. Bits of chicken flew in every direction along with the smell of burnt feathers. Shaking, Rosario and Guadalupe got out their pistols, fully convinced that this was their last day on earth. The soldier next to the captain was going to shoot Mama Elena, but the captain motioned him to stop. They were all waiting for his order to attack. "I have a very good aim and a very bad temper, Captain. The next shot is for you, and I assure you that I can shoot you before they can kill me, so it would be best for us to respect each other. If we die, no one will miss me very much. But won't the nation mourn your loss?" It really was hard to meet Mama Elena's gaze, even for the captain. There was something daunting about it. It produced a nameless fear in those who suffered it. They felt tried and convicted for their offenses. They fell prisoner to a childlike fear of maternal authority. "You're right. Don't worry. No one is going to kill you or fail to respect you, that's for sure. Such a valiant woman will always have my admiration." He turned to his soldiers and said, "No one is to set foot in the house. See what else you can find here and let's go." What they found was the huge dovecot formed by two slopes of the roof on the enormous house. To get to it, you had to climb up a 20-foot ladder. Three rebels climbed up and stood there stunned for some time before they were able to move. They were impressed by the dovecot's size and by the darkness and the cooing of the doves gathered there, coming and going through narrow side windows. They closed the door and the windows so none of them could get away and set about trapping the pigeons and doves. They rounded up enough to feed the entire battalion for a week. Before the troops withdrew, the captain rode around the back patio, inhaling deep whiffs of the scent of roses that still clung indelibly to this place. He closed his eyes and was still for quite a while. Returning to Mama Elena's side, he asked her, "I understood you had three daughters. Where are they?" "The oldest and youngest live in the United States. The other died." The news seemed to move the captain. In a barely audible voice, he replied, "That is a pity. A very great pity." He took leave of Mama Elena with a bow. They left peacefully, just as they had come, and Mama Elena was quite disconcerted by the way they had treated her. It didn't fit the picture of the heartless ruffians she'd been expecting. From that day on, she would not express any opinion about the revolutionaries. What she never learned was that this captain was the same Juan Alejandres who had carried off her daughter Gertrudis some months before. They were even on that score, for the captain remained ignorant of the large number of chickens that Mama Elena had hidden behind the house, buried in ashes. They had managed to kill 20 before the troops arrived. The chickens are filled with ground wheat or oats and then placed, feathers and all, into a glazed earthenware pot. The pot is covered tightly using a narrow strip of cloth. That way the meat can be kept for more than a week. It had been a common practice on the ranch since ancient times when they had to preserve animals after a hunting party. When she came out of hiding, Tita immediately missed the constant cooing of the doves, which had been part of her everyday life ever since she was born. The sudden silence made her feel her loneliness all the more. It was then that she really felt the loss of Pedro, Rosaura, and Roberto. She hurried up the rungs of the enormous ladder that went to the dovecot, but all she found there was the usual carpet of feathers and droppings. The wind stole through the open door and lifted some feathers that fell on a carpet of silence. Then she heard a tiny sound, a little newborn pigeon had been spared from the massacre. Tita picked it up and got ready to go back down, but first she stopped for a moment to look at the cloud of dust the soldiers' horses left in their wake. She wondered why they hadn't done anything to hurt her mother. While she was in her hiding place, she had prayed that nothing bad would happen to Mama Elena, but unconsciously she had hoped that when she got out, she would find her mother dead. Ashamed of these thoughts, she placed the pigeon between her breasts to free her hands for the dangerous ladder and climbed down from the dovecot. From then on, her main interest lay in feeding that pathetic baby pigeon. Only then did life seem to make a little sense. It didn't compare with the satisfaction derived from nursing a human being, but in some way it was similar. The milk in her breasts had dried up overnight from the pain of her separation from her nephew. As she looked for worms, she kept wondering who was feeding Roberto and how he was eating. Those thoughts tortured her night and day. She hadn't been able to sleep for a whole month. The only thing she accomplished during this period was to quintuple the size of her enormous bedspread. Chencha came to shake her out of her rueful thoughts. She gave her a few pushes to get her into the kitchen. She sat her down in front of the stone metate and set her to grinding the spices with the chilies. To make this process easier, it helps to add a few drops of vinegar from time to time as you're grinding. Last of all, mix the meat, finely chopped and ground, with the chilies and spices, and let the mixture rest for a while, preferably overnight. They had barely begun their grinding when Mama Elena came into the kitchen, asking why the tub for her bath had not been filled. She didn't like to bathe too late, or her hair wouldn't dry properly. Preparing Mama Elena's bath was quite a ceremony. The water had to be heated with lavender flowers, Mama Elena's favorite scent. Then this decoction had to be strained through a clean cloth and a few drops of aguardiente added to it. Finally, she had to carry buckets of hot water, one after another, to the dark room, a small room at one end of the house next to the kitchen. As its name indicated, this room didn't receive any light, since it had no windows. All it had was a narrow door. Inside, in the middle of the room, there was a large tub into which the water was poured. Next to it, there was a pewter pitcher for the aloe water used in washing Mama Elena's hair. Only Tita, whose mission it was to serve her until death, was allowed to be present during this ritual to see her mother naked. No one else. That's why the room had been built to prevent anyone seeing in. Tita first had to wash her mother's body and then her hair, and then finally she had to go iron the clothes that Mama Elena would put on when she got out of the tub, while Mama Elena stayed in the tub relaxing and enjoying the water. At a summons from her mother, Tita helped her to dry herself and put on her warm clothes as quickly as possible, so she wouldn't catch cold. Afterward, Tita opened the door just an inch, so the room would cool down a little bit, and Mama Elena's body wouldn't suffer from an abrupt change of temperature. The whole while, Tita brushed her hair in that room lit only by the weak beam of light through the crack at the door, which created an eerie atmosphere as it revealed strange shapes in the rising steam. She brushed Mama Elena's hair until it was thoroughly dry, braided it, and that completed the liturgy. Tita always thanked God that her mother only bathed once a week, because otherwise her life would be a real cross to bear. In Mama Elena's opinion, both her bath and her meals were the same story. No matter how hard Tita tried, she always got an infinite number of things wrong. Either her blouse had a wrinkle, or there wasn't enough hot water, or her braid came out uneven. In short, it seemed Mama Elena's genius was for finding fault. But she had never found as many faults as today. And that was because Tita really had been careless with all the fine points of the ceremony. The water was so hot that Mama Elena burned her feet when she got in. Tita had forgotten the aloe water for her hair, burned the bottom of Mama Elena's chemise, opened the door too far, and finally got Mama Elena's attention the hard way and was scolded and sent from the bathroom. Tita was striding toward the kitchen, the dirty clothes under her arm, bemoaning the rebuke she'd received and her boundless failings. What grieved her the most was the extra work burning the clothes meant. It was the second time in her life that this sort of disaster had occurred. Now she had to wet the reddish stains with a solution of potassium chlorate, plain water, and soft alkaline lye, scrubbing them repeatedly until she managed to get them out. And this difficult job was added to her job of washing the black clothes her mother wore. To wash those, she had to dissolve cow bile in a small amount of boiling water, fill a soft sponge with it, and use it to dampen the clothes all over. Then she had to rinse the clothes in clear water and hang them out to dry. Tita rubbed and rubbed the clothes as many times as she had rubbed Roberto's diapers to remove the stains. What worked was to heat up a little urine, dip the stain in it for a minute, and wash it afterward in water. That is the one way to make stains fade away. But no matter how much she soaked the diaper in urine, she couldn't get rid of the horrid black color. Then she realized it wasn't Roberto's diaper she was holding, but her mother's clothes. They had been soaking in the pot where she had left them since morning, forgetting to wash them in the sink. Embarrassed, she set about correcting her error. Settled in the kitchen, Tita resolved to pay more attention to what she was doing. She had to suppress the memories that tormented her, or Mama Elena's fury would erupt any moment. Since she had left the sausage resting when she had gone to prepare Mama Elena's bath, enough time had passed to go on to stuffing the casings. The casings should be pork intestines, cleaned and cured. The sausages are filled using a funnel. Tie them off tightly, 4 fingers apart, and poke them with a needle so the air can escape, because air can spoil the sausage. It's very important to squeeze the sausage firmly while filling it, so you don't leave any spaces. Hard as Tita tried to stem the memories that assaulted her and caused her to make more mistakes, holding a large sausage in her hands, she couldn't keep from remembering the summer night when they all slept outside on the patio. During the dog days, they hung giant hammocks on the patio because of the unbearable heat. They set a large earthenware jar full of ice on a table, and inside they placed a cut-up watermelon in case someone was hot and got up in the middle of the night wanting to eat a slice to cool down. Mama Elena was a specialist in cutting the watermelon. Taking a sharp knife, she would drive the point in so it penetrated just to the end of the green part of the rind without touching the heart of the watermelon. She made her cuts through the rind with such mathematical precision that when she was done, she could pick up the watermelon and give it a single blow against a stone in a particular spot, and like magic, the watermelon rind would open like the petals of a flower, leaving the heart intact on the table. Unquestionably, when it came to dividing, dismantling, dismembering, desolating, detaching, dispossessing, destroying, or dominating, Mama Elena was a pro. After she died, no one ever came close to accomplishing the same feats with the watermelon. From her hammock, Tita heard someone get up for a chunk of watermelon. This awakened in her the urge to go to the bathroom. She had been drinking beer all day long, not to cool off, but to make more milk to nurse her nephew. He was sleeping peacefully next to her sister. Getting up in the dark, she couldn't see a thing. There wasn't a glimmer of light. She was walking toward the bathroom, trying to remember where the hammocks were. She didn't want to stumble into anybody. Pedro, sitting in his hammock, was eating a slice of watermelon and thinking of Tita. Having her so near made him feel a tremendous excitement. He couldn't sleep, thinking of her there a few steps from him, and from Mama Elena, too, of course. He heard the sound of footsteps in the shadows and stopped breathing for a few moments. It had to be Tita. Her distinctive fragrance wafted toward him on the breeze, a mixture of jasmine and cooking odors that was hers alone. For a moment he thought that Tita had gotten up to look for him. The sound of her approaching footsteps blended with the violent beating of his heart. But no, the steps were moving away from him, to the bathroom. Pedro got up as quiet as a cat and followed her. Tita was surprised to feel someone pull her toward him and cover her mouth, but she realized who it was immediately and didn't offer any resistance as the hand first slid down her neck to her breasts and then explored her entire body. While she was receiving a kiss on the lips, Pedro took her hand in his and invited her to explore his body. Tita timidly touched the hard muscles on Pedro's arms and chest. Lower down, she felt a red-hot coal that throbbed through his clothes. She removed her hand, frightened not by her discovery, but by a cry from Mama Elena.
"Tita, where are you?"
"Right here, Mommy. I'm going to the bathroom."
Fearful that her mother would suspect something, Tita hurried back to bed, where she passed a tortured night, enduring her desire to urinate along with another urge. Her sacrifice didn't do a bit of good. The following day, Mama Elena, who for a while seemed to have changed her mind about sending Pedro and Rosaura to Texas, speeded up her plans for their departure. 3 days later, they had left the ranch. Those memories were banished by Mama Elena's entry into the kitchen. Tita let the sausage she was holding fall to the floor. She suspected that her mother was able to read her thoughts. Behind Mama Elena came Chencha, weeping unconsolably.
"Don't cry, child. It annoys me to see you cry. What has happened?"
"Felipe has come back and he says he's dead."
"Who says? Who's dead?"
"Well, the child."
"What child?" Tita demanded.
"Well, what child do you think? Well, your nephew. Whatever he ate, it didn't agree with him, and so he died."
Tita felt the household crashing down around her head, the blow, the sound of all the dishes breaking into a thousand pieces. She sprang to her feet.
"Sit down and get back to work. I don't want any tears. Poor child. I hope the good Lord has taken him in all his glory, but we can't give in to sorrow. There's work to do. First work, then do as you please, except crying, do you hear?"
Tita felt a violent agitation take possession of her being. Still fingering the sausage, she calmly met her mother's gaze, and then, instead of obeying her order, she started to tear apart all the sausages she could reach, screaming wildly.
"Here's what I do with your orders. I'm sick of them. I'm sick of obeying you."
Mama Elena went to her, picked up a wooden spoon, and smashed her across the face with it.
"You did it. You killed Roberto,"
screamed Tita beside herself, and she ran from the room, wiping the blood that dripped from her nose. She took the pigeon and a pail full of worms and climbed up to the dovecot. Mama Elena ordered them to remove the ladder and let her stay up there overnight. Mama Elena and Chencha finished filling the sausages in silence. Mama Elena was always such a perfectionist and so careful to get all the air out of the sausage, no one could explain it when they discovered a week later that all the sausages in the cellar were swarming with worms. The next morning she ordered Chencha to get Tita down from the dovecot. Mama Elena couldn't do it because her one fear in life was heights. She couldn't bear the thought of having to climb up that ladder, 20 feet high, to get to the little door that would have to be opened in order to get in. She feigned a convenient pride, more than she actually had, and ordered someone else to bring Tita down, even though she felt a strong urge to go up there and personally drag Tita down by the hair. Chencha found Tita holding the pigeon. She didn't seem to realize it was dead. She was trying to feed it some more worms. The poor thing probably died of indigestion because Tita fed it too much. Tita looked up, her eyes vacant, and stared at Chencha as if she had never seen her before. Chencha came down, saying Tita was acting like a crazy person and refused to leave the dovecot. Fine. If she is acting crazy, then I'm going to put her in an asylum. There's no place in this house for maniacs. And without a moment's delay, she sent Felipe for Dr. Brown to take Tita to an insane asylum. The doctor arrived, listened to Mama Elena's version of the story, and set off up the ladder to the dovecot. He found Tita naked, her nose broken, her whole body covered with pigeon droppings. A few feathers were clinging to her skin and hair. As soon as she saw the doctor, she ran to the corner and curled up in a fetal position. No one knew how much she told Dr. Brown during the hours he spent there, but toward dark he brought Tita down, now dressed, and she got into his carriage and drove off with him. Chencha, weeping, was running alongside the carriage as they left and barely managed to toss onto Tita's shoulders the enormous bedspread she had knit during her endless nights of insomnia. It was so large and heavy it didn't fit inside the carriage. Tita grabbed it so tightly that there was no choice but to let it drag behind the carriage like the huge train of a wedding gown that stretched for a full kilometer. Tita used any yarn she happened to have in her bedspread, no matter what the color, and it revealed a kaleidoscopic combination of colors, textures, and forms that appeared and disappeared as if by magic in the gigantic cloud of dust that rose up behind it. To be continued. Next month's recipe. A recipe for making matches.